You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Hello guys, Jonathan and Brad here from the Choose FI Radio podcast. Today we're going to be interviewing Brandon Pierce from pierceonearth.com. Brandon is really our first prototypical example of what the four-hour work week actually looks like, and especially when you combine that with the idea of designing your future, being willing to reject societal norms, take your family, and travel the world. And really, it's this idea of lifestyle design and intentional living.
Yeah, this should be a really fun episode for sure. We were introduced to Brandon through one of our community members, Andrew, and just diving into his content, his life, it's fascinating. So not only is Jonathan talked about the four-hour work week, and there's certainly aspects of that that we're going to chat about, but just traveling around the world. Brandon and his family are living that geo-arbitrage life. And I know personally, I have a million questions because this is something that I would love to do in my perfect world, but I'm a little scared to do. And I'm going to pepper Brandon with as many questions as I can possibly think of. So, this should be a fun one indeed.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's so fun to be here.
You know, as we were prepping for this show, I was really just blown away by how your story is the perfect case study to show a practical implementation of all the different concepts that we've been talking about over the last 30 or 40 episodes actually looks like. And I can't wait to dive into this story with you.
Awesome. I'm excited to dive in.
I think it's probably worth noting that, Brandon, you are not in the FI community per se, but can you give us the flyover of what this journey has looked like for you and where you are now?
Yeah, I can give a really quick version just by saying that back in 2003, I was working in a call center doing internet tech support, dial-up internet tech support, if you can believe it, and teaching piano lessons on the side and going to college on the weekends. And life was busy, and I was studying computer programming. I'd been programming since I was a kid, but I decided that's kind of the career path I wanted to go down. But as I started looking at what was going on around me, like my father-in-law lost his job in the IT world, and I just saw that there's no such thing as job security when you work for somebody else. And that really hit me, and I realized that I wanted to have more control over my financial future for my family. And so I started developing this program to help me keep track of my piano students. It's called Music Teacher's Helper. Well, I didn't call it that then. It was just something for me. But I thought about the possibility of turning that into a business and seeing if we could make that into anything that could support us financially. And so I put a lot of thought and effort and time and energy into creating that. And over several years, it slowly grew into something that was able to support us, allowed me to quit my job. And since then, we've been traveling the world now for 8 years, been to 36 countries as a family, and just trying to live life fully now.
That's amazing. And along that journey, I know that you and your family have volunteered at rescue centers and schools all over the country. Your kids have had a very fascinating approach to education, which maybe we can touch on a little bit today. But you have designed your life around family, traveling, living abroad, and you've been able to fund it by what essentially started not even as a side hustle, just as a project that you were doing for yourself. And you saw an opportunity to turn that into something that could help others and fill a need.
That's right. In fact, as I was showing it to other teachers who were in my community, they would look at the software and what it was doing for me, and they were telling me things like, I would love this. When can you make this available? So just having that kind of feedback gave me the incentive to put the energy into it. It helped me realize that it may turn into something. I mean, it was really just a hobby project at this point. And I was okay if nothing ever came out of it. I was just kind of doing it for the fun. Let's throw it out there. Let's see what happens. But yeah, as I started to get my first few paying customers, I realized, wow, this is pretty cool. And these people are paying me every month to use the site. And I'm enjoying maintaining it and building it. So that's how it started. Now, the whole travel the world thing, I mean, that's a totally different story because, I mean, we had kind of done all the things we were supposed to do. You know, I'd gone to college, got a job, I got married. I had two kids at the time. We bought a house. We had a mortgage. And I mean, we're just kind of, we were comfortable, but we weren't fulfilled. And I knew there was more to life than what we were experiencing. And I wanted to give our family the chance to experience what life was like outside of this only bubble of reality that we knew. But I was terrified to make a change like that. I mean, even though by this point, it was probably 2006 or seven or so, we had a business that was growing. It wasn't like earning a ton of money. And I still had my job and everything was kind of stable. But to leave our community, to sell our house, I mean, all this stuff was terrifying. I wouldn't have made this choice had it not been for, I think, my wife's mother. She was just under 50, and she got diagnosed with cancer. And within a few months, she passed away. And it just kind of shook us because we realized, I mean, I just woke up to this fact that life is short. Or it can be very short. And I don't know when my time is going to be that I'm going to go. And so I made a commitment right there that I want to live my life fully now. And I don't want to put off this dream of exploring the world with my family until who knows when. I need to do something now about it. And so that's when I really started putting a lot more energy into my business. I quit my job and just started building up the business to the point where it could support us. And we sold our house and we sold pretty much everything we owned. And started traveling. So that's kind of how that story began.
I think it's very easy for us to gloss right over to the point where you're traveling around the world and you have this designer lifestyle. But I think it's important that we slow down and we talk about those early days when this is all happening, because it's very hard to recapture that. Yet for our audience, those are the most valuable moments in time to look at. What was that early thought process like? So you have this software, and if you don't mind, I'm going to dig a little bit into what this software does. So you're a piano music teacher, you're bringing in kids, you're scheduling lessons. Is this some sort of payment management software? How is this helping you with the music lessons that you're offering to these kids or adults? These kids are adults.
Yeah, I was teaching just part-time, just weekend lessons. So I had maybe 10 students or so at the time. But still for me, there was a lot of time that I was spending doing busy work around that. So for example, students would come to their lesson, they'd say, how much do I owe you again? And I'd have to pull out my records and I'd have to do some calculations. And it just took a lot of time at the lesson that seemed inefficient to me. And so I created a program first just to keep track of all the payments that they gave me and their lesson schedules and their contact information and such. And then the software when students would ask me how much they owed, I'd just look at the software and it would tell me right there, and then they could write me a check or whatever. Later, of course, we expanded that to the point where students could log in from home, make a payment with a credit card, all of that. So really, it's a software that helps independent music teachers and also larger studios with multiple teachers. We have a separate product for that, but it initially helps independent music teachers keep track of all of the business aspects of running a teaching studio.
So what I want people to focus on here is something we've referred to previously that one of my favorite authors, Scott Adams, refers to as the talent stack. And he talks about being in the top, let's say, 20% in skills in just a whole bunch of different aspects of life and how you never know when you're going to connect them. But that connection can be serendipitous, like in the case here of Brandon. So Brandon was a music teacher. He was giving lessons, but he was also had the ability to code this program. And he realized there was a need just in his own life and put it together and created this music teacher's helper. And in the early stages, right? And then in speaking with colleagues, he realized there was a need for this. And then he made moves on that. That's just such a powerful thing that I really wanted to take a minute to highlight it. Do you remember what that first sale was like? And if it was a light bulb moment that made you realize, hey, maybe there's something here.
Yeah, I mean, if I can remember, there were a few music teacher friends that I had, of course, in the area. And it just started with that. I started showing them, hey, look at this program I made that I'm managing my piano studio with. And they're like, wow, that's really cool. Of course, they weren't paying for it yet, and it wasn't even available to pay for. But it opened my eyes to the idea that, hey, maybe there are some other teachers who might be interested in this too. It took me a few weeks, I think, to put a payment page up. But that's really all it took for me to start seeing if other teachers were interested in this. And I mean, I didn't really do a lot of online advertising and stuff like that at the time. It was just mostly talking to friends and colleagues about it. And then eventually I went to music teacher conferences, a local music teacher conference in the area, and paid for a booth and, you know, started presenting the software. And then sales started coming in and I realized that I was onto something.
So you have this idea and now you have your first sale, but at some point during this process, you have to realize that your idea has legs. Like wow, this is something that I could scale. I think that's got to be a light bulb moment in and of itself. And I'm curious, how far from the point of your first sale did you think to yourself, this idea has legs?
I think after the first sale. I mean, I knew right away, as soon as someone is willing to pay for it, I'm like, well, surely there are other people who are willing to pay for it. And that's all it took.
And the cool thing about your idea and ideas in this field is that you don't have to do more work to get that second sale, right? If one person was willing to pay for it, then there's no difference between one person buying it and 100 or 1,000 people buying it.
Yeah, the product is the same. I mean, there's always more marketing and sales to do, but I don't have to necessarily add more to the product in order to handle another customer.
You know, there's this inflection point that I know that Brad has had to deal with and most budding entrepreneurs have to deal with. You have this business, you've made a sale, it's making some money, but it's not replacing your 9-to-5 income. And hopefully, as you continue to nurture it, you're putting time in, you're developing it, you're doing what you were talking about with the advertising, you're going to conferences, all those things start to take up more and more of your time and you're earning additional income from it. But there is a point, a crossover point in which you realize both my 9-to-5 and my side hustle are both not sustainable at the same time. One of these has to give. And I'm just wondering, what did that process look like for you? And at what point did you realize I need to make a choice on which path I'm going to follow?
Yeah, this business is something that grew quite slowly and organically, because as you just said, I was working at a full-time job. I had a family to take care of. There were a lot of things going on in my life. So I could only put minimum hours into this, early mornings, late at night, lunch breaks. So it grew slowly. So I think it was probably 3 or 4 years into it when we had we're probably making around $1,500 a month from it. And I was working now at a programming job, which, by the way, I got before I graduated. I just found that college was actually not really that helpful for me to learn programming. So if anyone out there is wanting to learn to become a programmer, you can go to college and learn it. But I found it so much more efficient just to study on my own and to have a project to work on. There are so many amazing free resources out there to learn programming, whether it's Code Academy, Khan Academy. I wish that stuff was available when I was first starting. But just having your own project to work on, so many people out there are willing to support you in it on online forums through sites like this. It's much easier, I think, doing it that way and much more efficient and cheaper than doing it through college. But back to my programming job, I was working there full time, but I, at this point, you know, earning $1,500 a month, we had quite a few customers. I was doing the support, the marketing, the programming, the graphics design. I was doing everything in the business, and I just realized that I could not keep doing both at the same time. My life was becoming a little bit too frazzled, and I realized that one had to give. And man, I mean, I wasn't earning that much at my job. I think I was making 60 grand a year, which isn't that much for a programmer, but it was decent. And then we had probably a year's worth of savings as well. So I decided that we're only making $1,500 a month with this business, but it's got potential. And I know that if I can put more time into it and continue to grow it, I believe that it could support us. And I had a year to figure that out. So I decided to quit my job and put my energy full time into the business. And that's when it really started growing.
There's so many different things that I want to hit on with that. One is that you're not this overnight success story. It's easy for us to gloss right over to the end product. But I love the fact, you know, you put the work in, you put 3 to 4 years of time in to get to that point where you're making $1,500 a month. And then you insourced all the work and you were able to teach yourself skills because you had a project to work on. And because you were able to take whatever it is that you learned and practically apply it to something that was adding value to your life, that had to speed up that learning curve. So I'm very impressed by that. And at the same time, I can totally relate to that because I think that that is something that I have seen in my own life. And I'm sure Brad, because he has done a few of these type businesses, has seen in his as well.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, Brandon, when you're going through your story, that's so reminiscent of my own story, which was you get to that point in the entrepreneur's journey where you're doing everything and you're learning a ton and it's so exciting and you've proven out that it works to you. In your case, you're making the $1,500, you have customers, clearly this works. But the limiting factor is your own time at that point. And you just simply don't have enough of it with a family, with a full-time job, with what essentially amounts to a full-time job with your business and your side hustle, and something has to give. So I know for myself, that was the exact same thing. And it was a difficult decision for me because I was making a decent income. We were saving a boatload. I was a tax manager for a decent sized company. And this was a safe job, right? So for me, there was a lot of consideration over whether this was the right thing. I had that fear that you talked about before. But if you can put yourself in your shoes back then, which I know it's a decade ago, but like, did that decision almost go the other way? Did you ever contemplate not working full-time on the software and just kind of letting it go? Or was this just like a slam dunk decision for you and your family?
Well, like you, I mean, it was a terrifying decision to quit my job and lose that stability. But at the same time, I wasn't really enjoying my job that much. And this was just so much more exciting to me. So it just felt like the way that life had to go.
Yeah, I completely understand. And that's exactly where I was too. This was an opportunity of a lifetime for me to work on something that I'm passionate about and something that I believe that I could grow if I could put my full time and effort behind it. And I think it's almost exactly what you're describing. So yeah, to everyone out there listening, like, this is part of the struggle, especially if you start your business as a side hustle. It's almost invariably going to come to that inflection point where you need to make this decision. And it is not easy. There's no question about it. Anybody who tells you it's an easy decision, they're either a fool or they're lying to you, in my opinion. This is difficult. But Brandon and I both made the same decision. And in our cases, we, by being able to put that effort in and that time, it has worked out exceptionally well.
But I got to say that both of you were operating from a place of financial strength. While neither of you, when you made the decision to pursue your side hustle full time, were at FI, which we defined by having 25 times your annual expenses saved up, neither of you were at the financial cliff. Brandon, you had a year's worth of savings under your belt. And even though your business was only bringing in $1,500 a month, it was bringing $1,500 a month while you were sacrificing sleep, time with your family and kids, and possibly your sanity so that you could work on it. And when you were able to pull yourself out of, you know, your 9-to-5, and give it your full time, you were able to see results somewhat quickly, I would imagine.
Yeah, it really didn't take long. The next year or two, I think we were already bringing in 5,000 a month and then 10, and it just kept going up from there. And I was able to hire people out at that point to help me run the business so that it was taking less of my time and I could focus on other things.
It's always that first hire, because that first hire, you're saying, there's enough margin in here that I can take a pay cut in order to bring someone else on. I imagine that's kind of another like pivotal moment in the journey of your business.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of learning and a lot of mistakes in hiring it over the course of years in this business. I think I started hiring a customer support. I think that was the first one I tried. And I hired some team out of India or something like that to do it. But they were just absolutely not getting the kind of energy and responses that I wanted. They weren't really listening to customers. They could do copy and paste responses to things like a knowledge base, but it was not what I wanted to offer as service in my company. So then I decided to bring in, actually, this was an idea from my mom, who has a lot of brilliant ideas, but she recommended I just ask my customers if any of them want to help out on the support team. And I ended up paying them an amount for each email that they answered. And that was it. And we had a few join us, and that helped so much. It was so affordable because I wasn't paying for people to sit around waiting for phone calls or whatever. It was just email support as it happened. And there were people who knew our product, who were passionate about our product, who knew our customer because they were our customer. And that worked really well.
Yeah, I got to say, Brad, there's probably something there to explore, that idea of hiring from within your community, especially people that understand your product, they understand your niche. I think there's probably something worth exploring there for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I know from my own personal experience with my website, Travel Miles 101, we had a Facebook group. We have, I think it's 9,000 members in there. And I wound up hiring one of the most active members of the community. And she's now our community manager. And there was no more logical person than her. So it was ideal. And yeah, I mean, we talk about who's going to care more about your business than you. Probably nobody, but who's going to care about it next? It's the people who are part of your community, who care, who live this. And Jonathan, in our case with Choose a Vi, we obviously have many, many thousands of people. So if we ever were to hire down the road, logic would suggest that's where we start.
For sure. Brandon, the reason that we're so excited to do your story is like a retrospective look at exactly the path that we want so many people in our audience to be able to choose if they desire. And it's just the perfect story. So you're at the point where you've broken the game, right? Your income from your business is at this point providing more than your family needs to keep food on the table. You have enough to set aside. You've replaced the income and more that you are making from your 9-to-5. And at this point, you have this decision that you're going to make. And I will say that traditionally in our country and maybe globally the world, they say that if you make more, you need to spend more. Now it's time to buy all the trappings that come with financial success. And you made a very different choice. And I'm curious what that decision was for you and why you made this different choice.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, we were comfortable in living in suburban America, but we weren't fulfilled. And there was a deep part of me that knew that even if I got that bigger house and that nicer car and loaded up my house with all these cool gadgets and fun stuff, I knew that ultimately I wouldn't be any happier or more fulfilled doing that. And that really what I needed was to slow down and to have more connection with my family and to change my pace of life to be one that gives me time to introspect so that I can grow personally. And I knew that that would also really be facilitated by putting myself in new environments with new people, new thoughts, and just something that was hard to get if I just followed the traditional path.
All right. So, Brandon, I'm curious as to the thought process behind just this whole decision. So was this always a lifestyle play, I guess, like with your actual business? Had you always planned in your perfect world scenario to hire a team and, like Jonathan mentioned at the outset of the interview, make it like a 4-hour work week, Tim Ferriss? Was that the plan to really make this a lifestyle business?
Honestly, I hadn't had much plan. When I created the business, it was really just for the purpose of having financial security. So I didn't really think too much about, you know, hiring other people and outsourcing and all that. I did read the 4-hour work week at some point, though, and that really opened my eyes to the possibilities of that. Travel has always kind of been a goal for us, but I hadn't really realized the power of hiring other people and outsourcing to get help running the business. And I'd never had any intention to become a CEO or a manager or anything like that. So this was all new territory for me.
So you reject the MTV Cribs lifestyle. And then I would say this is the more subtle choice. You reject the HGTV cookie cutter, keeping up with the Joneses, Pinterest worthy lifestyle. If you subscribe to one of those aforementioned kind of ideas of what the perfect life looks like, it's easy to find role models to tell you exactly what to do with your income and with your time. But now you have this void. And what do you replace it with?
We replaced it with travel, really. It was more about a focus on not so much stuff, but on experiences, on connection, and on personal growth. And those were the things that we wanted to live for. And also service and finding a way to really give what we have inside of us to the world. And it took us a long time. I mean, it's a continuous exploration of all of these things. It's like, I can't say at that moment I had it and we were done. It's like, I'm still learning and I'm still growing. And I'm still figuring out the ways that I want to contribute.
With many of the people that we've talked to at this point that have done the geo arbitrage, they did not have any kids in tow. They were, at this point in time, their kids were either out of the house or they hadn't had kids yet. You're making the decision to do this with, at the time you made the choice, a 5 and a 3-year-old. And now I'm sure they're, you know, in their teens, or one of them at least is in their teens. What did your life look like as you were getting into this journey? And how has it changed over the last several years?
Yeah, we started out, well, first, we weren't quite sure that we were ready for the leap of like selling everything and going to travel the world full time. Like, that was a big decision. So we decided first to test the waters by taking a 6-week trip to Panama together. So it was such a cool experience because I felt like we bonded more as a family during that time than I think we had our whole lives. We were together 24/7, visiting indigenous people in their villages, marveling at the construction of the Panama Canal, and just appreciating all of the beautiful nature that was surrounding it. And I think one thing that really hit it for me was there were so many amazing things about Panama, but I think what really hit home for me is when I just started appreciating more the little things, like being with our kids for so much of the time just gave us the opportunity to kind of see the world through our children's eyes. And we started to appreciate the little things in life more. They would point, you know, at a caterpillar on the sidewalk or whatever, and we'd be bending down and just like in awe of this cool creature. And all these little things that kind of pass us by and we took for granted in normal suburban life, we started to feel like we were connecting again to ourselves and to each other.
That's so powerful, Brandon. And it reminds me of two things. One, I think it's such a stark contrast to the idea of being stuck on the hamster wheel, where it's incredibly difficult for you to be present with your family and with your kids, because in your mind, you're constantly going back to the to-do list, to the 600 emails in your inbox, and to the tasks that are continually piling up, to the debts that you have to work in order to be able to service those payments. And it also reminds me, to a large part, it reflects what my co-host Brad's life is like. When we talk about the joy that he gets and he is able to use the word frolicking in the pool with his kids, It's those simple joys that I think over time just get ground out of us due to the heavy weight of life's responsibilities. But this paragraph that you wrote on this article, it just, to me, it just so perfectly encapsulated this idea of being present and talking about the idea of being able to view things from your kid's eyes. And like you said, being able to appreciate the caterpillars on the grass, the texture of the palm trees, to actually hear the sounds of the birds and the insects outside. That's something that, frankly, even me at this point in my life, I don't have time to listen to that stuff. So that hits me right where I live. It's very, very powerful. And I get how attractive that is. In fact, I would even go so far to say at some level, our society understands how attractive that is, because I've even seen just here and there a few commercials on TV talking about this idea of just for a second, try to look at things through your kid's eyes. And I think it's kind of one of these public service announcement type commercials, but teachable moments, I think, is the way it's phrased. But you've gotten to develop and build a life around this, and that's got to be incredibly rewarding.
It is amazing. It feels amazing. And I have to say, we're not there all the time. I mean, I still get sucked into future thinking. And I mean, it takes a concerted, continuous effort to be present with our kids and to do this. But I think it is made a lot easier by the way we've structured our lives of being together all the time and of being in new places where we are stimulated in a way that causes us to wonder and to marvel at this incredible world.
So you take this 6-week period in Panama and you get to do this wonderful time with your family. And then you come back to suburbia. You know, why not just recreate that at home?
We really tried to create it at home. And I don't know what it was exactly, but I think just the pulls of the surrounding culture, the communities we were in, and just the mindset that we were surrounded by just made it so hard for us to connect that way. And we probably could have done it, and we probably still could do it. But there was another thing that just kept nagging at us, is that we loved traveling. We loved being out in these beautiful tropical places in wherever. And that's all we'd experienced so far is the tropics. But we loved being together doing new things like this. And we knew we wanted more of that. And the ways, because it wasn't just about being present for us. Like we learned so many new ideas from the people we met. Our minds were expanded in other ways. And we just saw so much potential for growth. I mean, I believe that travel is one of the biggest catalysts for personal growth, for transformation, as well as for family bonding. And we knew that we wanted more of that in our family.
So it sounds like after this 6-week trip, you did go home and attempt to at least give it a go. And maybe this wanderlust kind of set in and you realized, all right, we need to travel. Talk me through that mental decision. And when, if you can even put yourself back, like, do you think you made up your mind like when you were on that 6-week trip? Or was it something that you really, truly did fully anticipate going back to your regular life?
Good question. I don't think that we knew at that point. I mean, we wanted to travel. But again, this was kind of a testing the waters thing. And when we came back, we wanted to keep going. We wanted to keep traveling. But I mean, when we were in Panama, one of the other things that just felt so liberating to us was being without all of our possessions. Like we didn't have to worry about mail. We didn't have to worry about maintaining any of our stuff. We just had carry-on luggage and that's all we traveled with. And we realized that we didn't need any more than that. So when we came back home, we started looking around at all this stuff that we had cluttering our closets. Like, I don't know how many dozens of shirts I had, but I'm like, I don't need this many shirts. I don't need this much stuff. And we realized that we would feel so much better if we got rid of it. And when we did, it felt so liberating. Oh, it was like we were flying, because we didn't have any of this baggage that had been weighing us down for so many years, so much of it that we hardly ever even looked at or used. And it just felt so good to get rid of it.
Where did you end up settling for your first home away from home? Where was this first place that you landed?
We went to Costa Rica and we were there for about a year and a half. I think we were probably ready to move on after around 6 months, but we had booked ourselves into a year lease that was a great deal actually, and found ourselves pregnant with our third daughter who ended up being born in Costa Rica. So it was an awesome experience to be there.
Brandon, when you're there in a particular spot for so long, do you feel like it's home? Do you feel like you're just a tourist or that you're actually a resident there? Do you fit into the fabric of the city, the culture, the society? Like talk me through how that works.
It really depends on how long we're there and also on the place. So in Costa Rica, we started feeling, I mean, we were there for a year and a half, as I mentioned, and we got involved in the community there. So we had friends who were local Costa Ricans that we'd hang out with. We hang out with the expats. We got involved in the homeschooling community there, and it felt like home, absolutely. But there are other places there where we go where it's a couple months or maybe even longer, but it just doesn't, you don't have the same feel. There's not the same community there that's supportive, or we don't get into it as much. And I think that makes a big difference in how comfortable we feel there.
As someone who has not done a lot of travel and actually tried to put myself into a community, I'm usually there just as a tourist or as a quick visitor. What is it like to find and develop these threads, you know, connecting yourself to the local community in one of these foreign countries?
So it really depends, again, on the place. There are some countries, some cities that have a great infrastructure, a great community that's already there that you can just tap into. A lot of it for us has honestly been, in many places, the expats or the traveling families. Like this movement of families traveling the world together long-term like this, I mean, it's exploding right now. There are so many more people doing this, and there are lots of online Facebook groups and forums and websites and places you can go to find out where everyone is. And there's conferences like the one I'm putting on, the Family Adventure Summit, where you can meet other people who are doing this. And there are a lot of little pop-up communities that are kind of arising in different places. But in addition to that, as far as getting in with the local community, it really does depend on the place. So the place that we are kind of settling right now is San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, which is an incredible community. There have been foreigners coming there since like the 1950s, intermarrying with the Mexican families and building up arts communities. And it just, it a lot of places in the world you go, you know, I feel just like a tourist. I feel like I'm being eyed as Mr. Moneybags and I'm constantly being hounded for things and treated, trying to be taken advantage of. In San Miguel, you go to a restaurant and you see the foreigners and the locals eating together, having conversation. I mean, it's just one big accepting community is what it feels like. So it's very easy there to just tap in. All you have to do is go to a class about something you're interested in. My wife's doing belly dancing and she's going to a dream circle each week. Our kids are involved in lots of different classes and art lessons, and their teachers are from all over the world. Some of them are Mexican, some of them are from different places. So it just depends on the places you're going. Some places it's harder to tap into the local community because you are seen as such an outsider. Other places you're more welcomed.
So this obviously involves your kids. And since I know you mentioned homeschooling earlier, I think most people generally understand the concept, but there's two other forms of schooling that have come to my attention. And I'm wondering if you can maybe tease out the difference and where on the spectrum you land. The other term that I've heard of before is the idea of world schooling, which to me sounds a little bit more in line with what you're actually doing. And then also recently this term's gotten on my radar, and that's unschooling. Since I'm sure you've been exposed to all of those three disciplines, how you guys have approached this educational process for your kids in these different countries that you've gone to?
Yeah, these are terms that have really wide interpretations. So you may find people who call themselves world schoolers or unschoolers who do things vastly differently as far as educating their kids. So I will, I guess, not use those terms at the moment, even though I could easily identify with either one, and say that we follow kind of an interest-led learning approach. So I feel like when I went through school, I had a lot of wasted time learning things that didn't matter, that I wasn't interested in, that I would never use. And it just felt like I was doing a lot of busy work, even up through college. And I feel like the world is moving at such a fast pace and things are changing. We don't really even know what the job market, what the world is going to look like in 5, 10, 20 years. So I think more important than cramming our minds with facts, which now through the internet you can get just by asking Google a question for the most part, is inspiring our kids with the love of learning and facilitating them to learn the things that they're passionate about, creativity, which I think travel does amazingly well, and giving them the chance to pursue the things that they're most interested in. For example, our oldest daughter loves singing and songwriting. So she's been working with a professional singer-songwriter who lives in LA, been taking weekly lessons from her via Skype. She's also really into animation right now, and we bought an animation program with her. She's working on animating one of the music videos for a song that she wrote. It's like a 4,000 frame animation she's working on and really having fun with that. Our middle daughter's really into gymnastics, which is a little bit harder to find classes for if you're in a place for a short term. But when we're in a place longer, she does that. Otherwise, she practices a lot on the floor, on her own, wherever we happen to be. And she loves that. As far as math, the girls are, and I have three daughters. They're currently 14, 12, and 6 years old. And, you know, I don't really care, honestly, if they don't learn calculus or even algebra. Like I hardly even used algebra as a programmer. And I mean, I can see some professions that would be very useful for. But the thing is, this stuff is easy to learn these days. I mean, if you have a need for it and you want to learn something, it's not that hard to learn it. You devote several hours for over a period of weeks, and you can master something. And so I feel like if there's not a high chance that they're going to use it, I don't care so much that they learn it. But they're learning the math and the skills that are relevant to them right now. So they're, for example, learning some financial math. They're learning how to use spreadsheets because there are some things they want to learn how to calculate. For my youngest, it's mostly how many days until my birthday, or questions like that, and we'll, you know, learn to count on the calendar and things like that. So it's not a very structured or formulaic approach to education. We don't have a specific curriculum we follow. We just let things flow naturally and let the kids learn what's relevant and interesting to them at the time, and trust that as they grow and as bigger and more challenging things become relevant, they will have the motivation and the desire and the skills to learn those things as well.
I was listening to a Tim Ferriss podcast, and in this podcast, he was interviewing Chase Jarvis, who is the brain behind Creative Live. And in that episode, Chase said, creativity is the new literacy. And that just struck me at such a deep level. And I think it goes to what you're talking about. Not only are you encouraging creativity through the experiences that most people are waiting until they're retired to even attempt, but also in the way that you're tackling this learning process by getting them excited to ask better questions and then go find the answers that help them where they are on this journey and fostering that creative nature. So many people are just force-fed stuff that doesn't interest them and probably won't serve them. I mean, if I were to ask you, what's one thing that you remember from your early 17th century European folk literature 101 class in college, you might remember on random trivia night, but I doubt it. It's a fragment, right? It's a tiny fragment that you remember. But do you remember the things that you learned that you applied to your business? Of course you do. Of course you do. So I think there's certainly something there. What are your thoughts, Brad?
Yeah, I think following your passions is a huge aspect of why this is so appealing to so many people. You know, we think about school and what's a traditional school. You're learning nonsense that you're just memorizing. And to Brandon's point, any question you have like that, you can look up on Google in under a second. So why spend years learning at school stuff that you literally can call up at any second of any day of any year? So I love that he has allowed his kids to follow their passions, and you don't know where that's going to go. And that's the cool thing Brandon alluded to. Like, this is what she likes now, I think was a phrase he used. And you never know what that's going to be like a couple years from now. His oldest daughter is now doing a 4,000 frame animation. I mean, like, who else gets the opportunity to do that? So I think a lot of people, and I know, Brandon, this is my next question to you, is the fear. And I think just your knowledge of this whole community and the summit that you put on, one of the big things that are holding me back personally, because I'm in a similar boat to you. We have financial resources. We can travel. We have young kids. I would love to do something like this. I would love it. But we're afraid, frankly. There's mm-hmm. so many unknowns. And also, this suburban life is all we've ever known. And my wife and I both had great memories of growing up with friends and playing on sports teams in high school and all this stuff. And on some level, I feel like we would be depriving our kids if we took them away from that. But then I know intellectually that I would be opening them up to all these wonderful experiences that you're talking about. So I'm sure you've experienced this question hundreds of times. Like, what do you tell someone who's in exactly my boat, who would love to do this in a perfect world, but is just afraid to take that step?
I totally understand that fear. And I mean, we had it ourselves. And when we first started doing this, we homeschooled our kids. Like, we opened the books and tried to follow the same curriculum that the kids were learning in school, and just realized that it was pointless. It wasn't helping them foster their creativity. They didn't even want to do it. It was grueling, and they weren't really benefiting from it. And I think now the difference is it's not that we're sitting down and teaching them. We're not their teachers. We're facilitators. And if they have a question, we don't just give them the answer. Typically, we will help them learn how to find it if they don't know how to find it already. And it's really about empowering our kids to be able to choose and to be able to take control and learn the things that they need to learn, rather than, as you mentioned before, just like force feeding them information. So as far as getting over the fear, I mean, it's, you know, I kind of like actually what Tim Ferriss talks about with fear setting and just looking, well, what's the worst that could happen? But I think in this case, it's really about what you are losing by not doing this. I mean, it's hard to know until you've experienced it. So I would recommend maybe doing what we did and just like do a test the waters trip. Take 6 weeks take 2 or 3 months and go live in some foreign country for a while and see what it does to you. See how it affects your family and how much you're able to learn and grow from it, and then see if it's something you want to continue. It's not for everybody, but I think you'll find that it can be quite transformational.
Yeah, and I think that might be my next step, which is maybe, you know, for us, our summers are wide open. We have 3 months. We could easily take 4 to 6 weeks and do one of these adventures. And I think one of the biggest tweaks mentally is to not look at it as just a vacation, right? Because we could go be tourists somewhere, but that doesn't fulfill the goals of what we'd be looking for. So yeah, I mean, I guess you could rent an Airbnb for a month or 2 months or whatever and just immerse yourself in a culture. I think that's your suggestion for getting started, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The fast-paced travel is fun for a while, and if you need a quick vacation or something, but really the kind of travel I think that has a potential to be more transformative and go deeper is slow travel, where you're spending at least a month in a place, immersing yourself, taking things slower, where it's not every day going out and seeing stuff, but you're living in a place and you still have some routines and maybe you're getting involved in different community things. But I think the most powerful thing for me about travel is, or at least in the beginning stages, it was just realizing that my way of doing things, the way that I've always done things, isn't necessarily the only right way to do things. And that there are so many amazing, wonderful people out there doing things and thinking things and believing things completely differently from me, but yet they exude the same genuine humanity that I possess, and we can connect at that level. And it's just transformative. It was transformative for me.
What does it look like for you always being in a different country? Don't you worry about things like healthcare? Don't you worry about things like how expensive it's going to be? I mean, these are all unknowns. How do you just make so much money that you don't have to worry about any of it? These are the questions that I would imagine families would have before tackling something like this.
First of all, let me just say that when we announced that we were going to travel the world, like, people did think we were crazy, and we got a lot of backlash from family and friends. Some people were really supportive, but yeah, some of the biggest concerns were, what about all the dangers? I mean, aren't there kidnappers and drug dealers and all these problems you're going to have to face in these foreign countries? You're going to go sleep on some dirt floor and get diseases, and how are you even going to be taken care of with your healthcare? I mean, these were major questions a lot of people had for us. And then, of course, the expense of it. But as far as that goes, I mean, there are so many families doing this at incredibly low budgets. I mean, I know families who are traveling the world spending under $1,000 a month, traveling around the world. It's totally possible. In fact, we put out a survey from the Family Adventure Summit to almost 100 different families who are traveling the world. And you can get access to the survey for free. I'll send you the link. But it's amazing to see the spectrum of how much people are spending on their travels, how much they're earning, and all the different aspects that go into the finances of it. As for healthcare, it's funny. When we left the States, we had healthcare, of course, and I'll call it insurance. It's not healthcare. It's insurance. And I realized after being in Costa Rica for a while that it was totally not necessary. We canceled our insurance in the States because, first of all, if you get sick, and every country is a little bit different, but first of all, the healthcare is really good in most places around the world, maybe even better than the US in a lot of places. And I think that's a misconception a lot of people in the States have. For example, in Costa Rica, you have public hospitals that are free for everybody if you want to go and get anything done. You have private hospitals that you can pay for, but things are so cheap. I remember, for example, our daughter got an ear infection when we were flying into Ecuador. And so we were at this hotel and her ear was just hurting so bad. And we asked around, what can we do? Is there a clinic nearby? And somebody said, oh, no, there's a doctor we can call. He can just come to the hotel and check on her. He drove an hour to the hotel to check on my daughter's ear, gave her a prescription. We went and got the medicine. The bill, without any insurance, was $70 for the doctor to come all that way and back, and then like $5 or $10 for the medicine.
That is a shocking contrast to what you would find for that here in the States.
Yeah, and I could also point out that we had a baby in Costa Rica, right, without insurance. We decided on a home birth, and it cost us around $3,000 for, I think, monthly visits to get the ultrasounds and everything every month leading up to the pregnancy, all the post-visits, had to have a doctor and a midwife and a doula present at the house for the birth. $3,000 for everything, no insurance. Of course, we could have had the baby free in a public hospital if we wanted to, but we chose this other experience instead. But, you know, and I could go on and on about stories of people spending nothing or next to nothing on medical care in foreign countries with really high quality care.
Yeah, I think the only people in the world who worry about medical expenses absolutely destroying them are people in the United States. And it's a very frustrating scenario. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like you have a lot of options just to self-insure, basically, is what you're doing, right? It's things cost so little that you can just pay for whatever care you want. Like you said, you had the option to do it for free, but you chose to do a home birth. And that's wonderful to have the option to make that decision. Because frankly, you know, in the US, I suspect it would be many, many times the $3,000 that you spent. I mean, certainly in a hospital, it obviously would be without insurance. It would probably be 10 times that.
Yeah. And honestly, we do have insurance now. We got a travel insurance policy because we're spending more time in the States. now that we're coming back for conferences and things like that. So we got a policy through a company called IMG, which I think for our family of five, we're paying roughly $2,500 a year or something like that. And it's a really high deductible plan. Like, I feel bad even getting, I feel like insurance is just throwing money away. Like, when I looked at how much I was spending in insurance on the States and how much I was actually using that, I mean, it's tens of thousands of dollars that you're just throwing away for nothing. And if you could live in another place where I even feel like if I were living in the States and I got sick, I would rather fly to Mexico and get some kind of surgery than I would to just do it in the States. And it would be so much cheaper and I'd get a fun vacation out of it. But of course, it depends on the kind of disease you have. Depends on what you need done. But and that's maybe a bit extreme. But we do have insurance so that if anything catastrophic does happen to us in the States, we can be covered for that at least.
As you guys were talking, I was quickly looking up the stats, and to have a birth in the hospital, most hospitals are charging insurance companies around $30,000 a year for a natural birth and up to $50,000 for a C-section. So really a very stark contrast there. Brandon, I think our audience would be very interested in finding out how you spend your time. And a lot of us just don't realize where our time goes. I know Brad, it's kind of a soapbox rant for him that we're always just so busy all the time. And that, and this isn't his statement, but it is something that we've said on the show before, that busyness is a boast disguised as a complaint. And once you latch onto that concept and you say, why am I so busy? And you decide that you want to do what we always encourage our audience to do, which is to take action. If you really want to commit 100% to that idea, it would be such a valuable challenge to track your time and find out, why are you so busy? Where is all your time going? And the only reason I bring this up with you now is I know that you went through that exercise for an entire week and monitored, you know, within reason, where every minute of your day was going, and actually were able to extract some very meaningful data from that experience.
Yeah, this came because, I mean, I've always loved tracking my time, but I wanted to do it at a more detailed level, like you're talking about, because I knew that, I mean, I had so much time available. I was living the 4-hour work week at this point, pretty much. And I had a lot of discretionary time, and I wanted to make sure I was using it in a way that really served my best interests and my family's best interests. So I got a little tool called Slim Timer. I don't even know if it's still available, but it was this free tool that just lets you click start and stop, and you can label each thing you're tracking. So I started tracking how much time I'm working on each of my business projects, how much time I'm spending with my family, how much time I spend reading, all the different things that I was doing throughout the day, how much time I was wasting on Facebook or little games. And it was really interesting to have just this picture at the end of the week categorized how much time I'm spending in each of these things. And it made me realize that, you know, I'm maybe not spending as much time with my wife, for example, as I wanted to be. I think that week I was 7 hours on my business. I had a few extra things going on, so more than the 4-hour work week, but pretty close. And now, I mean, my time now has continue to shift. I mean, it's always doing something different. Right now, I'm nowhere near to the 4-hour work week in my life as far as work in general, but my main business, yeah, I mean, I spend just a few hours a week running Music Teacher's Helper, but I have some other projects that I'm very excited about that are consuming a lot of my time. And even if they're not really generating money right now, it's just something that I feel so excited about and so passionate about that I want to put my time into. And I think that for me has been the advantage, is having the freedom to choose how I spend my time, and also just having that awareness of where my time is going so that I can make those choices. It's been a cool tool for me to track my time. And I don't track my time to that level anymore, regularly anyway. I'll probably do it again at some point. But I do have a daily log that I keep every day as I'm on my computer. Every few minutes or every few hours, depending on what I'm doing, I write a note about what I did during that time. So that, for example, if I find myself after 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, and I'm writing, I just spent the last 30 minutes on Facebook and I was just reading a stupid article. It's a wake up call to me that I need to change something, and it helps me course correct midday. So that's a useful tool for me as well.
Yeah, that is so valuable. And that's almost a challenge I want to extend to our audience. If you found yourself saying out loud to somebody or in your head over the last several weeks, gosh, why am I so busy all the time? Do this. Take this on as a personal challenge for 1 week. and track your time and see where is your time actually going. And the tool that he mentioned was called Slim Timer. If that's still available, we'll link to it in the show notes. But I know that Brad challenged me with this several weeks ago, and I used a program called Toggle, T-O-G-G-L, which I looked up after doing some research on which ones were the best. And it is also free, and it's very intuitive. It works very well for exactly what we're describing, and it can generate a report to you to tell you where your time is actually going. And then take that and figure out, how can you optimize that to reclaim a piece of your life? So that's really cool. I wanted to take just a second, Brandon, and focus on one of these other projects that you're working on, because I think there's going to be a lot of value to people that are looking for a way to connect with like minds, especially like minds who have a similar view on how to approach this idea of traveling the world and forming these communities outside of maybe suburbia. And I was wondering, could you take a few minutes and tell us a little bit about the Family Adventure Summit?
Yeah, this was something that was inspired by the conversations we were having with a lot of people in our travels who would say things like, man, what you're doing is so cool. I wish I could do that. Or how can I do that? And also by the people who we knew who were traveling, who kind of sometimes felt a little bit lonely and wanted more like-minded people to hang out with. So we put together this Family Adventure Summit, which we just had our first one couple weeks ago in Penticton, BC, Canada. And we had around 200 people there, and it was so awesome. I had so much fun doing this. We had great speakers. We had really fun workshops and activities that went into topics, everything from location independence and entrepreneurship to family travel, travel hacking, and you know, education, world schooling, unschooling, all these topics. And then we had a huge kids program where the kids were doing, they had like 40 different activities to choose from. So some of them were learning guitar, some of them were doing art. We had an art room that was open all day for different arts activities. They went rock climbing, just a whole bunch of fun activities for the kids. And then we had family activities together. We had someone from the First Nations tribe come and lead us through a powwow. We had a drum circle. We had a family picnic, went to the farmer's market. So a lot of cool things. And we had, as I mentioned, 200 people there, and already 147 who signed up for next year, which I'm so excited about. And that's going to be in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, the place where we are living and loving. And it'll be over the Day of the Dead festivities. So we're super excited about that in 2018.
Awesome. You know, it's so cool, Brad, that I can literally hear the joy in his voice as he's describing this. Like, you can tell that there's a smile on his face as he's talking about it. And that's totally inspiring.
And, you know, one of the things that I love the most about it really is just the people that we bring together there, because these are people who are really intentional about the kind of lives they want to lead. Not all of them are full-time travelers. Some of them just travel for a few months, a year from a home base. But these are people who are choosing how they want to spend their time with their families. They're outside of the cultural expectations that are around them, and they see a bigger picture. And it's so fun to hang out with people like that. And there's also another project that I'm working on that is serving this similar market, and it is a documentary called Into the Wind. And you can see our teaser trailer up on intothewindfilm.com. And it's a film about highlighting a few families who are choosing to live more intentionally. And, you know, they're not all full-time travelers. But I just feel like there's such an interest right now for families who want to do this. And I feel like the information's out there, there's people out there, there's support out there. And I just want to help bring it together and help facilitate moving this movement forward.
Brandon, it's fascinating to see the similarities between what you're doing and the movement you're involved in and the FI community as well. Because just really simply, we talk about this need for community all the time. And we see events popping up where people just want to attend. They want to be with these like-minded individuals who you don't just see in your regular life. So that's a huge similarity. And also, there's actually a FI documentary in the works as well called Playing with Fire. So yeah, it's cool to see these two communities that are on this similar parallel path and both kind of hitting the mainstream, if you will, or certainly getting a lot more people involved who otherwise maybe wouldn't have if they just hadn't heard of it, unfortunately. So I love what you're doing to spread the word. And I'm curious, you just had the first Family Adventure Summit. Like, what was the most like surprising thing that happened there? Was there anything serendipitous that just occurred that you just couldn't have anticipated, but was just a real highlight?
Well, for me, I wasn't expecting how many people signed up again. Like, I was expecting maybe 5 or 10 families to sign up for next year. But like over 70% of the people who were there want to come next year. And I was just so touched and blown away The other thing is that I wasn't expecting the feeling that I had there. Like, and this is as an event organizer, like I just felt such a sense of service, more than I had felt in a long time, I think. Just that the work that I'm doing here is really serving people to make powerful changes in their lives and powerful connections. And I just felt so grateful and honored to be able to do that. So those were two things I was surprised by.
You know, it strikes me, Brad, that if people get started watching Playing with Fire and then that gets out of hand and goes into the wind, they got to be careful because their environment could radically change very quickly.
Very true. Very true.
All right, Brandon, we're sure that people are going to be absolutely fascinated, and people that have never considered or heard of some of the concepts which you're talking about, even though we've touched on it from the approach of geo-arbitrage, this is a worldview encompassing that idea. And we're sure that people are going to want to reach out and connect to you. How can they connect with you? How can they connect with the Family Adventure Summit? And maybe even look into this documentary, and how can they get more information on that?
Yeah, you can find me on my personal blog at pearceonearth.com. It's P-E-A-R-C-E on earth.com. Just contact me there. Family Adventure Summit is familyadventuresummit.com. And tickets are for sale now. And I'm pretty sure we're going to sell out quite quickly. So I would encourage people to go get those soon if you're interested in coming to Mexico next year for Day of the Dead. And then the film is intothewindfilm.com. And the film, I think, is probably not going to be out for another year or so, at least. But we are in the process of filming and doing a lot of pre-production stuff now. So it's very exciting.
All right. Well, before we let you go, we want to give you the opportunity to tackle the hot seat. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I love it.
All right.
Yeah, we were actually listening to some episodes in the car on the way to Leavenworth. I mean, I've listened to a few before then as well, but it was fun to listen to it as a family. Everyone was laughing at the hot seat.
That is awesome.
Awesome.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, question number one. What's your favorite blog that's not your own?
I wish I had a better answer for this, but I honestly don't read a lot of blogs or even consume a lot of other content. So I've kind of, if I had to choose one, it would probably be Tim Ferriss' podcast, which is full of awesome information. And as you know, and really inspiring. And I also really like Sam Harris's podcast. I listen to that one occasionally as well, called Waking Up.
Nice. Yeah, we are obviously big fans of podcasts. And yeah, the Tim Ferriss one is my favorite as well. So yeah, highly recommended to everyone out there.
Tell me a little bit more about the Sam Harris podcast. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, he covers a lot of topics. He gets into, it's really an ethics discussions a lot, and talks a little bit about politics, a little bit about religion, and a lot of the things that are happening globally in the world, and relating that back to philosophy and ethics.
Gotcha. All right. Well, question number two, and maybe this one's gonna be a little tough to answer. So your favorite article of all time, this could be one that you wrote or somebody else's. And let me just add this on in case it helps. If you'd prefer to do a specific podcast episode, that'd be fine too.
Okay. Yeah, that is a tough one. Again, as I don't consume a lot, but you know, I think if I'm pointing to my own, I'm more familiar with my own work than I am with other people's work. So I guess I could point to an article that I wrote for Medium.com. It's called From Call Center Support to Entrepreneur and Full-Time Travel with Kids. It covers a lot of the stuff we've talked about in this episode, but I think it sums a lot of things up nicely.
All right, Brennan, question number three, your favorite life hack.
So this is something we already talked about a little bit earlier, but it's time tracking. And I do multiple types of time tracking. As I mentioned, I have this daily log. I just open up a Google Doc every day. As I sit down at the computer, I type the start time, and then the end time, I type what I did, hit enter, next line, start time, end time, what I did. Throughout the day, I do that. And that really helps me stay aware of what I'm doing throughout the day. But then also at the end of every day, I write what I call my daily summary. And I just use an app on my phone called Diaro for that, D-I-A-R-O. And I just write a paragraph or two about how the day went, how I'm feeling, you know, what I might want to do differently tomorrow, what's on my mind. And often I will go back and read these, especially if I'm, you know, going to write a new blog post or I want to reflect on something. But even if I don't, just taking that time to introspect and to think about my day, I think helps helps center me and helps move me forward in a better direction.
Brandon, this is something that I've always wanted to do is time tracking and also really summing up a day. It's funny that you do both of these things. Honestly, I have had zero ability to follow through. I don't know what my problem is, but every time I say, oh, I'm going to do this, I just invariably stop. But I think you just spurred me on to actually take action on this. So I am going to report back to the audience on the Friday roundup with how this worked for me. So yeah, I'm pledging here to actually take action. So thank you very much.
Awesome. That's great. It also, the Diario app has, I mean, I guess you could just set an alarm for this, but they have a reminder system that can prompt you every night to, or whatever time you want to write in it. So that may help if you forget.
I have come to loathe push notifications, like absolutely despise them at every level. I no longer view it as a courtesy, but as a curse.
They could totally get too intense. I agree with that.
All right. Question number four, your biggest financial mistake.
Yeah. So it points to finances, but it isn't directly a financial mistake. So it's actually stepping too far away from my business and not doing my due diligence. So I made some poor hiring decisions, and I trusted too much and didn't follow up and keep checking. And I stepped back and kind of let the business run itself for a while, which was great in some ways. But in other ways, it made space for the business to sprout some weeds, which I am now pulling out, and it's a grueling process. So 4-hour work week's great, but it really takes having amazing people in place and really good processes. And it still takes a willingness to step in regularly for a little bit more than 4 hours a week and make sure, maybe even do an audit, make sure things are running well and cleanly. So that is my biggest financial mistake. I think I lost several hundreds of thousands of dollars with that one.
You tried to go down to 3 hours a week, got too aggressive.
Yeah, exactly.
Question number five, the advice you would give to your younger self.
I would say enjoy life now rather than only focusing on the future. I lived my life so much in my early days, just focusing on what's next, what's next. What's my life going to be like in 10 years? What's it going to be like in 20 years? I still think about that occasionally, but I realize so much of that is so unknown anyway and may change. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do 2 years from now because things just keep shifting in my life and I keep growing and I keep learning. And I think that's what's exciting about it. And if I keep putting off living now for what I think I want in the future, I'm never going to do it. So I just need to keep reminding myself, and I especially would remind my younger self, to enjoy life now. Find the pleasure, find the joy in life right now.
Yeah, that is brilliant advice. And while I think that's a perfect stopping point, we do have one last bonus question, which is, what's your favorite purchase that you made on Amazon.com last year? And, you know, if not Amazon, because of where your travels have taken you, what's your favorite purchase in general in the last year?
Yeah, Amazon is good for some countries, but in others, it's hard to get a lot there. My favorite purchase is actually a Mavic Pro drone. Absolutely love this drone. It folds up into, well, first of all, I've had a few drones over the years. I'm a photographer. I love photography as I go about traveling and video, but most of them were just junk, you know, the cheaper ones I bought. This is a really high quality, made by a company called DJI, which is like the leader in drone manufacturers. And this Mavic Pro is a very compact travel drone. The legs fold in and you can put it in this little pouch. They've never even asked me about it at security. Surprising. I've been through dozens of airports where they asked me to take out my laptop and my camera, but they never even questioned the drone, funnily enough. And drones are a little harder to use, I think, in a lot of countries where there are laws that are more strict, like the United States. But in places like Mexico or Indonesia or places like that, you can fly quite freely. And I've gotten some wonderful footage that I've been using in a lot of different projects. So really excited about that. I'm loving that purchase.
That is just such a coincidence, but literally I've never heard anybody mention a drone before on the show, but the last person that we interviewed, that was their favorite purchase as well, was a drone. But as an aside, I'm just curious, like how long does your battery last? And practically speaking, does that mean that you have a shoot in mind and you do a 15 minutes and you got to put it back, or like, how does that work?
Yeah, I purchased 3 batteries. Each one lasts about 20 to 30 minutes, depending on how you're flying.
Okay.
So, right. I mean, you can usually get enough in one battery, sometimes two, depending on what I'm doing. As far as having a shoot in mind, it depends. Sometimes I'll just see something beautiful and I'll just want to capture it and I don't know when I'm going to use it. Other times, yes, I want a specific piece of footage and I'll go shoot it.
That also makes me think that you're more involved with this documentary than just being a producer. Like, is this a part of the photography for that documentary?
Actually, no. We're working with a professional production house in the UK and also a former producer from National Geographic on this film. So I'm more involved in the production management side rather than the filming side. Although I may help with some of the cameras, but we're using much higher quality cameras than these that I've been using. But I mean, actually for our teaser trailer, we're using a lot of my footage because we haven't shot anything else yet. But so yeah, some of my drone shots are in the teaser trailer. Cool. But mostly my footage has been for personal stuff, for my blog, for Family Adventure Summit.
Well, you can hear my enthusiasm around the idea. I think my wife is worried that I'm going to come home with a drone at Christmas time, but definitely they've suddenly captured my fascination in 2017. Hey, Brandon, thank you so much for coming on the show with us today. This has been so much fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. It's been a blast.
Oh, on our end
you
as bet. Well.
Very nice to meet you, Brandon. This was awesome.
Yeah. And I'm going to keep listening to your podcast. I'm loving what you guys are putting out.
And, you know, thank you so much. I mean, Brad and I were both thinking this entire time how our two communities, how much they actually have in common. And it's almost like your community is the progression of our community, right? I mean, once you've broken the hamster wheel and you no longer are tied to your 9 to 5, what comes after FI? And many people say to themselves, well, once I'm retired or once I've achieved a certain level of financial success, then I'm going to travel the world. And I think it's really cool to see this entire group of people that have really developed and polished this idea. And again, it comes back to everything that we're talking about, lowered the barrier to get started on that journey, you know?
Right, so, right. And you know, what else is something I probably should have pointed out. I think even financial independence can be an excuse. Because there are so many families who are still they're just working a remote job, or they haven't reached FI yet, but they're out gaining their financial independence while they're traveling. They're not waiting until they get it before they go out. So I think it's a decision that you can make at any time, but it does, you know, there are lots of different considerations to that. There's definitely some advantage to getting financially stable before you go out, but there are families who I don't think I could do it this way, but who completely wing it. And they're like, they're making nothing practically, but they're out there traveling the world with their families and making it work and living amazing lives. So I don't think even finances have to hold you back.
I guarantee you someone in our audience will not be at FI and hear this and decide to go ahead and pull the trigger. And a gap year will become a gap life.
Awesome. That'd be so cool.
All right, buddy. Well, they know who to reach out to. So we'll definitely be sending people your way. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. You have a wonderful week.
Thank you. You too.
And thank you for being a part of the Choose FI community. If you want to support us, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. If you want to do that, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to choosefi.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of FI, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free, and just go to choosefi.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 38, The Why of FI, and right behind that, have them go listen to episode 21, The Pillars of FI. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.